This is a WSMI podcast from the Tally Broadcasting Station.
The Senate could pass the U.S.-Mexico-Canada agreement by the end of the week. A Trump administration official told reporters over the weekend the agreement could clear the Senate by Thursday or Friday. The Senate Finance Committee scheduled a markup for the agreement today, and the Senate could schedule a floor vote following the hearing. White House trade advisor Peter Navarro says fast-track trade legislation requires a minimum wait of 20 hours after a committee markup before a vote. The timeline differs from what was offered by Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell following House passage of the agreement. At the time, McConnell said USMCA would follow impeachment hearings in the Senate towards the end of the month. However, the impeachment trial won't begin this week in the Senate, and the House passed trade deal following a year-long negotiation between the Trump administration and the House Democrats is seeking changes to said agreement. A Chinese delegation will travel to Washington next week to join President Trump in signing the Phase 1 trade agreement between the two nations. The South China Morning Post reports China's trade delegation plans to travel to the U.S. on January 13th, 2 days before President Trump plans to sign the accord. China and the White House both have yet to officially announce the visit and their officials included in the delegation. However, Chinese Vice Premier Liu He will lead the group to Washington. The signing of the deal will mean increased agricultural purchases by China, as well as a partial end of the trade war that's dominated headlines for the past year and a half. China's soybean imports from the U.S. recently hit a 20-month high at 2.6 million tons, the highest number since March of 2018, when the trade war began between the world's largest economies began to pick up steam. In national ag news, the national average fuel price for both gasoline and diesel this year are expected to be slightly lower than last year, but with several uncertainties. GasBuddy's 2020 fuel outlook predicts 2020 will feature a yearly national average of $2.60 per gallon, representing a 2-cent drop versus last year. The report predicts the 2020 national average diesel price at $3.03 a gallon. However, the report notes prices are largely seasonal and locationally driven, noting that refinery maintenance, seasonal blend switches, and environmental regulation all impact price. Further, the report suggests that with the U.S. entering an election year in 2020, the most likely scenario will be for President Trump to shore up the U.S. economy ahead of the election to increase his chances of being reelected. Researchers say such move may contribute to a more reliable period of growth and a rise in oil demand met by increasing global oil production, even at OPEC's production curb through March. Moving on into other national news here on your Tuesday, despite having just over 200,000 hogs in their state, California law is set to impact how the nation's remaining 235 million head are raised. In November of 2018, Proposition 12 passed with 63% of Californians supporting the ban on pork, eggs, and other products being produced from animals who aren't given enough space to live. For pork, that's 24 square feet per pig. Last month, the American Farm Bureau Federation and the National Pork Producers Council filed a lawsuit against California challenging the law. The lawsuit includes statements from 13 pork producers who say they and their animals would be adversely affected when provisions of the law take into effect in 2 years. Todd Hayes, a pork producer from Northeast Missouri, is among those producers. He says the measure will make it difficult for nearly every producer in the country to comply before it takes effect.
For the pork sector, the biggest issue is the amount of room for a sow. A female animal is going to have pigs, you know, how much room they have, the size of the room, the area they're in, and the amount of time they're in certain smaller areas. That would really restrict so many of us from what we're doing. We would either have to increase our facilities, build bigger buildings to house the animals, or we had to cut back by about 30 to 40% of our production to give them more room, and that's not necessarily going to help a whole lot.
In the declaration Hayes submitted for the lawsuit, he warns complying with the proposition's requirements to use group pen space instead of individual stalls would increase sow mortality and lameness rates, as well as labor costs, all while losing productivity.
If I want to meet their standard, I would already have to be in a process of making changes on my farm by April or May of this coming year. I mean, that far out. It's just ridiculous. And for me and many other producers, we're like, this does not help the animal, what they're wanting us to do. In fact, in my opinion, and that's what I say in my script, was this is probably could be worse for the animal. From my past experience raising animals, being around pigs as a young kid, out in open penning area, inside larger facilities, in large pen areas, this is not the best way, not only for the pigs, but also for the folks that work with the pigs, myself and my family members and others. It's going to be a safety issue, too.
Proposition 12 comes a decade after California voters passed a similar measure regulating banning eggs from caged birds. Hayes said that following Missouri's unsuccessful challenge to California's egg law, Farm Bureau took a different approach.
In that case, a lot of the state attorneys filed suit against them, and we thought this is great. They're stepping up. They're supporting ag. They're going to fight this for us. But the courts ruled that that's not hurting a state. That proposition did not hurt the state of Missouri. The state of Missouri has filed suit against them. It may have hurt the producers, but the producers weren't the ones that filed suit.
Hayes suggested that California voters were swayed by emotion rather than sound science when they voted for it, and that it was time for producers to draw a line in the sand against laws being written without proper input or representation from the farmers that were impacted.
We could spend a lot of money and increase our footprint of building size out there just to stay status quo, the number of pigs we can produce. But then what's the next thing they're going to ask us to do? When then the next thing after that? So at some point we're saying enough's enough. You don't have any sound science. You're going off emotions. We understand what it is to raise pigs. We know, and we're always looking to improve how we can do it. But let us make that decision. Don't mandate something from a state proposition that you're playing on emotions and the people don't understand the issue at all.
He also adds that farmers outside of California had no say in how the law was crafted. Hayes says while compliance would be difficult, so would telling their processors to not send their product to California. Farmers from 7 states have declarations included in the lawsuit. This case is pending in the U.S. District Court's Southern District of California. In other national livestock news here on your Tuesday, Borden Dairy this week announced the company has entered bankruptcy protection and seeks to reorganize. In the announcement, Borden says the company intends to use their court process to pursue a financial reconstruction designed to reduce its current debt load, maximize value, and position the company for long-term success. Meanwhile, Dean Foods, the largest milk producer in the country, filed for bankruptcy in November of last year. Chris Galen of the National Milk Producers Federation says the bankruptcies are not an indication of the dairy industry, but rather just the fluid milk sector.
I think what's not concerning is the fact that overall dairy consumption continues to grow. In fact, that's really reassuring, not concerning. What's happened with Dean's and now with Borden, I think it's more isolated cases of companies that are in the fluid milk business, which as we know, not just for years, but for decades, has seen per capita declines in consumption, and it's affected their business models.
Galen says Borden will continue to process milk during the bankruptcy process.
So we would think that there's not likely to be major disruptions, but at this point it's too soon to say because we don't know exactly how many different individual farms as well as cooperatives may be supplying those various plants that Borden is operating.
Borden is a dairy distributor in Dallas, Texas, with products sold in Alabama, Colorado, Florida, Georgia, Kentucky, Louisiana, Mississippi, Missouri, New Jersey, New York, Oklahoma, Pennsylvania, South Carolina, Texas, and Tennessee, among other states. Moving on into regional ag news here on your Tuesday, Bunge last week announced the sale of its share of an ethanol production facility. Southwest Iowa Renewable Energy, or SIRE, repurchased Bunge's membership units effective on December 31st. The purchase was made under the terms of the Bunge Membership Interest Purchase Agreement and ends Bunge's 13-year ownership interest in SIRE. Andres Martin, a North American country manager for Bunge, stated, as Bunge focuses our resources on our core businesses, selling our shares in Sire while maintaining a relationship is an attractive opportunity. Sire is located on 275 acres in Council Bluffs, Iowa, operating an ethanol plant that is permitted to produce 140 million gallons per year. In addition to the stock repurchase, Sire will assume responsibility for originating corn and selling dried distillers' grains produced by the plant. Under a revised agreement, Bunge will continue to purchase all of the ethanol produced by Sire. Sire will also continue to lease rail cars from Bunge under existing lease agreements. Moving on into local ag news in our Ag Community Bulletin Board. Don't forget that later on this week, the Montgomery County Farm Bureau Young Leaders will be holding their January meeting at 7 p.m. on Thursday evening at the Montgomery County Farm Bureau office in Hillsboro. Also coming up later on next week, as 2020 arrives, the Illinois crop planting season will not be far behind, and there's plenty of tools and updates to help farmers plan and prepare for a successful season. Upcoming agribusiness seminars are scheduled across the state to assist farmers on a variety of topics, including federal crop insurance offerings, navigating the crop insurance claims process should devastation hit your farm, and a market outlook on grain prices for 2020. Country Financial and the Illinois Farm Bureau, along with other organizations, are pleased to team up for these agribusiness seminars and offer dozens of talks throughout the state to better equip farmers and growers with knowledge they need to make informed decisions for their operation. There'll be one of these agribusiness seminars held on Monday, January 13th at 8 a.m. at the Fayette County Farm Bureau in Vandalia. Guest speakers for the event are Doug Yoder with Country Financial, Gary Schnittke from the University of Illinois, and Joe Camp of AgriVisor. There'll also be another agribusiness seminar next Tuesday morning at 9 a.m. at the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers Lake Shelbyville Visitors Center in Shelbyville. Doug Yoder and Gary Schnittke will be there for that event as well. Again, there is no need to pre-register, but these events will be held on Monday of next week at the Fayette County Farm Bureau in Vandalia, and again next Tuesday at the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers Lake Shelbyville Visitors Center in Shelbyville. Also coming up next Tuesday, the 79th Annual Montgomery County Soil and Water Conservation District's annual meeting will be taking place Tuesday evening, January 14th at 6 at the U of I Extension Office in Hillsboro. A light meal will be provided by Milanus Catering, followed by a short program from Ashley Dawson, Farm Bill Biologist with Pheasants Forever. Ashley will discuss the importance of providing wildlife habitat cover and how the program can be utilized for that purpose. You can make your reservation by calling the Soil and Water Conservation Office at 532-3361 and asking for Melissa. All of these RSVPs for the dinner are due by Friday, January 10th. In other bulletin board news, the U of I Extension will be offering the state-mandated Certified Food Protection Managers course and exam. This two-day course will be held from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. at the Montgomery County Extension Office in Hillsboro on January 30th and 31st. Participants are required to attend both days of class. The exam will take place on the second day, and it is very important to bring a photo ID along with you for the course. The class, materials, and the exam will all be offered in English, and if you need special requirements, you need to let the office know during registration for reasonable accommodations. The class will be taught by Lisa Peterson, the nutrition and wellness educator with the U of I Extension. The class provides the minimum classroom work to prepare for the national certification exam, and topics will cover foodborne illness, safe food handling, cooking and storage, employee health and hygiene, facility safety and maintenance, as well as cleaning and sanitation. Pre-registration is due by Thursday, January 16th, and pre-registration is required because exams need to be ordered prior to the course. You can register by calling the Montgomery County Extension Office in Hillsboro at 532-3941 or online at extension.illinois.edu/cjmm. And finally, on your Tuesday morning in bulletin board events, the Carlinville FFA alumni will be holding their biannual dinner auction on Saturday, January 18th at the Carlinville Elks Lodge. Doors will open at 5:30. Silent auction will be held from 5:30 until 8. A buffet dinner will be served at 6:30, and a live auction will begin at 8. The dinner will consist of a ribeye or chicken breast dinner catered by the Carlinville Elks Lodge, and there'll be a cash bar available as well. Tickets are available for $20 for adults, $15 for children 12 and under. Tickets are available around Carlinville at the CNB Bank and Trust, or PJ's Tire and Auto in Carlinville, or any Carlinville FFA alumni member. All proceeds from the event will go to support youth in the Carlinville FFA chapter, which is celebrating 90 years in 2020. And that'll wrap up this Tuesday morning edition of the Ag Show. But remember, if you have any ag news for us or anything for the Ag Community Bulletin Board, that can be emailed to us at WSMI@WSMIRadio.com. So for this Tuesday morning, January 7th, this has been Gabe Osborne reporting for WSMI Ag News. And Randy, one more thing I'd like to add, happy birthday to my mom.
Oh, well, I wondered if that's who name this was here on the list.
Yep, happy birthday to my mom.
Don Osborne of Coffeen.
Yes.
And also celebrating a birthday today, her 90th, Marge Drew of Gillespie.
Happy birthday.
Thank you, Gabe.
Thank you.